Welcome to TNT's Will Podcast, the official companion podcast of the TNT series Will. I'm your host, Michael Wood. Each week we'll have an in-depth discussion about the latest episode of the show with its creator and executive producer, Craig Pearce. So, episode 4, Brave New World. One of the key characters in the story, and it will be a surprise to anybody who's read Shakespeare biographies, is very sinister character in the Elizabethan story, Richard Topcliffe, Elizabeth's torturer, who is a real person. Yes. This is not an invention of yours,
no,
Craig.
No. It was one of the fascinating discoveries I made when I started researching the world when I was writing the show. This character, Richard Topcliffe, the Queen's chief persecutor and pursuer of Catholics, he took his job very seriously. He had a torture chamber in his private London mansion. And there was a figure of speech at the time, "Don't Topcliffize me," which meant "don't give me the third degree." You know, he was very famous, very feared, and very close to the Queen. How close, we don't really know. But we know he fantasized about being very close. And there are letters existing still today of him writing quite chatty letters to the Queen. We don't know if she just thought he was a psychopath one that she needed, or whether she, you know, valued him highly as a servant of the Queen. But it's interesting that there is no biography of Topcliffe, you know, and I don't know why an historian hasn't written one. It's quite hard to find much detail about him, but he was a very real character. And I think probably the establishment got a little bit ashamed of him and were like, let's not talk about that. You know,
in the end, it's like waterboarding and all that stuff,
yeah,
isn't it? You know,
yeah.
they sort of say, this has just gone too far.
Yeah.
I think torture was actually not on the statute book of Elizabethan England, but he did it.
That's right.
And,
yeah.
You know, they saw the Jesuits as the enemy within, didn't they?
So, yes.
They gave him some kind of license.
Yes, they did. And you could obviously be tortured, but there was a fairly formal process. A warrant had to be issued for torture. So it was this grey area. It was like black ops, really.
Let me ask you the question then, which is, you do a gag in episode 4, which, if I may say so, is very Shakespearean, which is Shakespeare often puts characters in the pressure where they're almost kind of, kill Claudio. You've got to do a thing against yourself.
Yes.
You've got to hunt yourself. You've got to do, you know.
Yes.
And just tell us how episode 4 ends.
Hoist by his own petard.
Hoist by your own petard, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's very nerdy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Petard was a bomb that was sort of buried beneath the battlements to try and bring walls down.
Yeah, you're going to blow yourself
during a siege, and you get blown up by your own bomb.
And they love those plot devices.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. In episode 4, it's about Will tasting the first blush of fame, which by the end he realizes actually, you know, that's not what it's all about. It's about the work. It's about the people you care about, and about dealing with the things that need to be dealt with. But by the end of episode 4, the Queen's feared persecutor and pursuer of Catholics, Richard Topcliffe, decides that he needs something to counter Southwell's propaganda. He needs his own propagandist. He needs someone who can talk to the masses. Well, who is the new kid on the scene who is talking to the masses? Justice Young, bring me, you know, let me know. Oh, Mr. Topcliffe, it's William Shakespeare. Topcliffe pulls him in and says, I want you to write a play to counter Robert Southwell and to destroy his reputation, an anti-Catholic missive to the masses. So by the end of episode 4, we've got Shakespeare having to fight against himself. And that's the problem that we're left with.
When you look at this episode in particular, episode 4, I mean, you do get this sense of life lived to the full, don't you? I mean, by now, Will is into his love affair with Alice while Topcliffe is rampaging around with terrible threats to everybody. I mean, we'll turn to Will and his family in the next episode, but
Well, I think
the Alice story is great, Craig. Yeah. I mean, it is irresistible, and she's irresistible. I mean, I love the fact that the Burbages have this sister. Mm. What led you to that?
Well, I think, you know, the incredible, one of the many incredible things about Shakespeare as a writer is that he wrote such iconic, beautiful female parts at a time when women couldn't even act on stage. And it was such a male-oriented industry and such a male-oriented world. Although, as Alice says in the first episode, it seems that women are only good for raising children, ruling the nation, or whoring. I haven't decided which one I'll take up yet. You know, so of course, the most powerful person in that world was a woman, Queen Elizabeth. She ruled the nation. So, you know, like all worlds, and, you know, Shakespeare wrote these very powerful, very smart, very funny female characters. And what I wanted to do with Alice was create a character that could have been the inspiration for some of these characters that he wrote. So, and yes, there's an incredible love story there. But as Alice goes on, she deepens and changes as a character. And there's also a meeting of minds there. And I think possibly, you know, the heartbreaking thing about Will and Alice's relationship is that if Will and Alice had have met in different circumstances and at a different time, they could have been lifelong partners and lovers. But Will's circumstances, when he meets Alice, really forbids that, because he already has a wife and three children at a time when you couldn't be divorced. And you know, he was a father very young at 18 before he knew who he was. And he really values his role as a father and a husband. But there's another side to him that has never had the opportunity to be expressed. And it is expressed through his relationship with Alice in this episode. But of course, he's like the, you know, rock star who's had the one hit single, you know, and he thinks he's kind of made it. But of course, he hasn't really. And what he's doing with his fame is he's using his newfound celebrity to push, you know, under the metaphorical bed, the thing that he really should be dealing with, which is what the hell is he going to do about his relationship with his cousin, Southall, who is the most hunted man in England and head of the underground Catholic movement, who has tasked him to help him write this missive to the Queen pleading for religious freedom.
Mm. I mean, Southall appears to his shock in the audience for one of his plays, doesn't he, at one point?
Yes.
And he's really trying to push Will to use his talent, as Southall sees it, to better purposes, isn't he?
Absolutely. And I think with Southall, it's a complicated relationship also with Will. I mean, Southall's got a real mission, which is to bring about religious tolerance and, in his mind, peace in England. And that's, you know, that's a cause that Will really can't argue against. It's a noble cause. But on the other hand, you know, Southall's, I think, a very tricky character, and he won't let Will go. And charismatic characters like this, they need to be followed. And Will very much was a follower as a younger man, only a few years younger than Southall, looked up to Southall, loved Southall. Southall as precociously talented, wonderful writer, voraciously intelligent. I'm sure Will would have gone, I want to be just like that when I'm all grown up. But of course, now Will has gone a different way and discovered his own passions and his own talents. And a charismatic figure like the Southalls of this world, they need followers, both literally, because, you know, they're heading a cause, but I think emotionally they need followers. And Will is going a different way, and Southall doesn't like that. And of course, the best arguments are always true arguments. And Southall's saying, this is a much more important cause than writing, you know, a play with a farting dog in it. And it's something that Will can't argue against. But at the same time, it's really a poison pill that he's giving Will, because Southall's saying, God's not going to let you go. I'm not going to let you go. And as we know from what Will says to Marlowe in episode 2, above all, freedom. That's what Will is looking for, intellectual freedom, creative freedom, personal freedom. Southall's saying, no, you don't get freedom. You get to serve. serve me, serve God.
And the trouble is, that's bound up with Suttle's take on sex and love as a not just a deep Catholic, but a Jesuit, you know.
Absolutely.
And their view of sex as sin and all that stuff. Mm. He's trying to load on. I mean, he goads Will with his lust. You're sinking into lust, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Whereas Will is passionately in love with a beautiful woman who reminds him that we could be the marriage of true minds, doesn't she?
Absolutely.
Point, you know?
Absolutely. And you know, the thing is that, of course, Will is swept up in this love affair with Alice, but he knows, ultimately, that, well, where's it going to lead? He can't get divorced. He has responsibilities as a husband and father. Alice is young. She can't, you know, live openly as a player's mistress. That will ruin her chances of having a family. So where is this going to go? But, of course, they are both swept up in the euphoria, the drug, if you like, of new love. And, of course, that is all going to come crashing down.
Let me just ask you a last question on episode four. And it's just about Will's own way of making it in life, if you like. Shakespeare himself, if I can put it that way, always struck me as somebody who probably held his cards close to his chest. Mm. You know, there's one of the sonnets where he says how careful I was when I first took my way, when I went on my way, to keep everything in the gentle closure of my breast or something like that. Mm. You know, he's almost telling us that he was a wary person who guarded himself. And you can kind of understand that with his dad bankrupted and done for religion and a lot of pressures of the time.
Mm.
You've got a fabulous line in this episode four, to find greatness, you must travel alone. Mm. And there is a sense that Will is always traveling alone in this, isn't it? And it's it's not just the way that you direct the camera, is it,
no.
Craig?
No. Well, you know, I think there's not one personal letter or diary entry. There's nothing written on a piece of paper that is personal about Shakespeare other than his, you know, rather shaky and variable signature on a couple of legal documents. But there's this vast body of work which says almost everything there is to say about what it is to be a human being in the collected works of William Shakespeare. And when I was setting out to write the series and thinking about who Shakespeare was as a character, I said to myself, and of course this could be the case, it may just be an accident of history that nothing personal survives, but isn't it much more interesting dramatically to imagine that Shakespeare was hiding in plain sight? You know, plain sight, because he's setting out to have a successful career as a playwright, which is a very public thing, but hiding because he can always say, well, that's that character thinking that or saying that. That's not me. But who the hell knows what is him? Well, I think you can pretty much divine what is him through his plays to some extent. But I do think he was a secretive person and had a lot of secrets within his soul.
Yeah.
And had to hide them from the world.
Which very nicely ends episode four and will lead us to the next podcast of episode five.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Craig. Thanks a lot. Join me next Tuesday for an all-new episode of TNT's Will Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to TNT's Will Podcast in the Apple Podcasts app, and please leave a rating and a review while you're there. And remember, Will is all new Mondays at 9 on TNT. I'm Michael Wood. Thanks for listening.